The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your CJ Cup Megapod featuring breaking news. We'll get to that in a second. Here to join me, breaking it all down, Kyle Porter is here. KP, new day, new room for you.
New day, new house, new room. My kids think that we, I think they think that we're the Day family, Jason Day, just traveling around in a, we don't have an RV, but that's what it feels like, just touring the country. I wish it was like January, February. We could just tour the West Coast, see some PGA Tour stops. But yeah, I'm ready to talk CJ Cup. Fun couple of weeks, Masters a month away. I'm fired up.
And Mark Immelman, who, big surprise, is at a golf course. Hey, Mark.
It's not a golf course. Hold on, if it's not a golf course, if you want a precursor to what Georgia looks like in the fall, I'm here at the Columbus State Golf Facility, and you can see it's going just a little brown. Check that, not a cloud in the sky. It's a very dry month, October. So beautiful outside right now. It's sort of in the early 80s, low 80s. So weather perfect for golf courses right now. So yeah, actually with my team, they're practicing, but obviously with you guys for a bit.
Well, much appreciated. Let's jump into this. We tried to record this about a half an hour ago, and there was a little bit of breaking news. We kind of pulled the fire alarm. Dustin Johnson tests positive for COVID-19. He withdraws from the CJ Cup. That's the big news. That's the big surprise. Tony Finau also out. He tested positive prior to the Shriners and did not play last week either. KP, we'll start with you. Dustin Johnson, number one player in the world. He was the favorite to win this week, and now I suppose his preparation towards the Masters is kind of up in the air.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to somebody this week who's covering Houston, and I think he's committed to Houston, or at least was planning on playing. So he's got, you know, of all the guys that not a lot of guys are going to play Houston. You know, maybe Koepka, I think, maybe Phil, he usually does. So he's got that to fall back on a little bit, but yeah, I mean, it's not ideal. I guess if there's one guy where you're like, hey, he could just show up and win the Masters, DJ would be up there. But you know, it's kind of a bummer. We're on a little bit of a run now after 2 or 3 months of like freedom from a lot of the COVID stuff. You had Scheffler at the US Open. Finau was probably the biggest name to date last week, and now DJ this week. I mean, you know, I think it won't get as much attention as maybe it would. Like if the best player in the world in basketball got COVID, if the best player in the world in football got COVID, it would be a really big deal. It won't get that attention in golf, but it is a big deal. And I think it's a big deal because he had symptoms. He went to the tour and said, hey, this is how I'm feeling. So it's not an asymptomatic thing. So I think there's a little bit more, you kind of pause and you're like, okay, you know, how's this going to go over the next few weeks? Hopefully he'll be ready to go for the Masters. Cause you don't want, that's the thing that I keep thinking about with this stuff is like, who's going to have to be out for Augusta? Who's going to have to be, and thankfully we only had one or two of those for the first two majors. But if Rory's out for the Masters, if JT's out for the Masters, that's where it would be a really big bummer for one of the bigger events.
Yeah, I think there's so many things I want to talk about here. So, Mark, to Kyle's point, the symptoms is interesting. You know, I couldn't think of another positive test. Maybe Nick Watney, one of the first ones where the golfer was actually experiencing symptoms. And then also, I mean, you're out there, Mark. You understand the responsibility of, as golfers do every week, protecting the rest of the field, protecting everybody else that's out there. Dustin Johnson, from what we understand, felt maybe a little ill, goes and gets a test. That's what he's supposed to be doing, right? That's him doing his job, protecting the field and protecting everybody else that's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that sort of jumps out to me out of all this, because I just found out the news as you guys did too, is that obviously when the player steps out of the PGA Tour bubble, so to speak, you know, you got to be a little, you got to keep yourself, you know, isolated as far as possible too, because when you get back to normal life, especially if you're down in Florida or Georgia, where I am, where states are sort of open for business, you know, anything's likely to happen. And so you bring up a good point about the McIlroys and that sort of crowd of the world, because I'm sure this now will be a bit of an eye opener to them to say, hold on, you know, COVID is still around, COVID is still real, and I need to do the very best, not just to protect the field, but to make sure that I'm good to go. So you never really know where you're likely to pick this up. I mean, we've just had two kids on my team that went to a little get together with the soccer team a couple of days ago, and two of them were exposed to someone with COVID. So there's a mandatory 14-day quarantine they have to undergo, even though they have not been tested. So once you step out of the tour bubble, you've got to be a little careful. I don't know personally when DJ arrived in Vegas, and I don't know if this was the arrival test, because you get it tested when you arrive and when you leave, or whether he tested, then wasn't feeling well, and he got tested again. So, you know, that's up in there, and I'd have to find out more. But the one thing, again, that comes to me, comes to the forefront of my mind, is that, you know, the tour are doing a good job of maintaining the safety of the players, and the players are doing a good job while they're out on tour. But the onus is on, you know, someone like myself who works in the tour, someone, obviously the players, the media, all that sort of stuff, to make sure that when they're away from the PGA Tour, they still do the right thing. So it's sad news for the event, and certainly it's big news given that DJ is the current world number one and arguably, you know, one of the best players in the world right now.
Yeah, KP, I'll let you put a bow on this. We'll move on to Shadow Creek and everything else we've got going on. But I was on HQ with Doug Bell a few minutes ago, and he made a good point. Like, a lot of these guys haven't played since the U.S. Open, so they've been, you know, quote unquote, outside the bubble. They haven't been being tested every single week. A lot of them might not be on the charter. So now that a lot of these bigger names are returning and entering in the quote unquote bubble again, it seems like this might have been more likely than other weeks. Obviously, it's never great to hear, but it kind of makes more sense this week that a lot of guys are returning.
Yeah, I don't know that DJ was social. I mean, can you social distance on a boat that's like 20, 30 feet long or whatever? Didn't he buy – I heard he bought Michael Jordan's old boat. Is that true?
I don't know. You're the boat insider. You'd have to let us know.
I'm your boat guy.
You were sitting on the dock of the bay last week when we had this podcast, so you're the guy.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's a good point. I was out there. I think that's a great point. And I think that, you know, I think Mark brings up a really good point. I kind of wrote about this in the newsletter that I just wrote about DJ, of like, this is going to be for your Rorys, your JTs, your, you know, the guys that the ROMs that only you're like, I have X number of shots at Augusta. I really, really, really don't want to ruin one because I contract COVID and I'm asymptomatic. It would just suck. Like, that would be a sucky way to not get to play a Masters. And so I think this is definitely for those guys going to be like a signal of like, you know, next month, you kind of got to lock it down. And I think they will, you know, and especially the big names. I don't think that there's any risk worth taking over the next month to keep you from playing what's going to be one of the most unique majors and unique Masters of all time.
Certainly is. Okay. We're going to hard pivot here to Shadow Creek and the CJ Cup. It is still, even now without Dustin Johnson, without Tony Finau, a very strong field. Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, just to name a few. The sponsors invite list is a phenomenal list. I mean, Tommy Fleetwood, Ricky Fowler, Sergio Garcia, that man, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka. How is Brooks in on a sponsor's exemption? How is he not in this field already?
Well, I don't understand how Fowler and Fleetwood's like the 14th ranked golfer in the world.
I don't trust this list, producer Jacob. He's furiously typing. He's giving me a look of he doesn't know where he got it.
Well, you have to bear in mind that when the CJ Cup was over in Korea, there was stuck qualifying criteria, and there were players from the Asian Tour, if memory serves, that were part of the invitation list. So I can see why, because there was, as far as I'm understanding, maybe a co-sanctioned event with the Asian Tour, maybe a tri-sanctioned event too. So with that being said, there are spots that are held for players from different tours. So I think that's brought to bear over there.
Interesting. Well,
Tommy Fleetwood is Tommy Fleetwood's exempt for every tournament in the world except the CJ Cup. That seems crazy.
It's called a co-sanctioned event, man. When they play events in the South African and European tours, you know, the South African tour gets a certain number of players from their tour that are members that can get in. Same thing happens down in Australasia. The same thing happens in South America a little bit. When you bring the PGA Tour in, you bring some of the names, but then you protect your members. And so, you know, it's a great way for the tours to get world ranking points for their players, and the great way for those tours to sort of gin up sponsorship and attention to the tour as well.
But how do you qualify? If you're ranked 16 in the world and you can't qualify for an event, how do you even qualify?
Now that I don't know. I'd have to see what the exemption criteria are, but I know that there were certain spots held for, you know, certain players.
Producer Jacob is right on this. I don't know how. I agree. I don't know how some of these guys weren't already exempt. But anyway, the big story, Brooks Koepka back in action. Obviously hasn't played since the Wyndham Championship. He's been, I mean, we're a year now. I think he's been dealing on and off with the knees, gone through a couple of rounds of rehab. And KP, this is the quote that might not sound very good. Quote from Brooks Koepka: "It's not a full tear, but there's definitely a tear there. If cortisone doesn't work and it actually gets worse, it'll be surgery and you're out for 9 months." Your thoughts?
Well, we talked about this a little bit before. I brought this up, I think it was last December, about, hey, we worry about the Koepka knee thing. And kind of the consensus at the time, I was on, I think it was on the No Laying Up podcast, and we were kind of all like, I don't know, not really. Like, he's had stuff in the past. He had the wrist thing. You know, he kind of bounces back from stuff. And here we are almost a year later, and nothing has changed. I guess my deal with Koepka is, you know, he talks about, I saw he had a quote about, like, hey, I feel so much better now, way better than I did at the start of 2020. And it's like, well, man, you told me you felt great at the start of 2020. So I can't like really buy into anything that he is saying at the moment, because I don't know how the first round's going to go. I don't know how the first event's going to go. I'm kind of out on his short and long-term future because of this knee thing. That's not a slight at his skill set or, you know, kind of where he's at. He can't get everything properly aligned health-wise, and therefore his game is just, it's just not that good right now.
Well, to that, I mean, I was the guy on this podcast that when I was out on tour, I was sort of getting the Brooks Koepka insight, because if you guys remember at one stage, the knee was sort of the news, Brooks's knee, and what was the state of the stuff. And he told me to my face, and I'll stand by this to my grave, that he's like, I feel good, the golf swing feels good, the preparation has been good. But I've mentioned before, and this sort of springs to mind, Kyle, as you make the point that you do, is that his technique and the way he plays with that really strong shut club face, he has to use that front leg really, really hard. And there's a lot of torque that he places on that thing. So perhaps he was feeling good, and perhaps a partial tear, which was healing, got aggravated while he was playing in the return to the PGA Tour from the COVID lockdown. So I don't know so much, and I'm sort of with you. Like, if he's telling us one thing and then something else is happening, it's all very confusing. The one thing I do hope, though, and it's something I always hope for these guys, is, you know, injury. At one stage, people were conceding 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 majors to Brooks Koepka the way he was playing. Now, all of a sudden, his future's up in question. So it once again is, to me, is emblematic of, you know, how fickle this can be, and how guys that are athletes like this that go at the speed, that hit the ball, whatever the yardages they are, hitting the ground at 100 plus mile an hour multiple times a day. I mean, something's got to give. And joints like wrists, knees, elbows to a certain extent, sometimes shoulders, this becomes a thing. And so I'm hoping for Koepka that there's a quick resolution here, because a forward knee, you know, that's like a football player. You're going to that knee at the speed he is. You know, there's always going to be that seed of doubt in the future, even when he's healed.
Wasn't there a hip thing too? Didn't that come out this
year? Well, I don't know, but I can imagine so. You know, if you're having knee issues, the human body is a beautiful thing. So if the knee's off, something's going to compensate for that. And the next thing in line would be the hip. So I could believe it if it was.
I guess it's one thing to be like, you know, he's mentioning they're shooting it up with cortisone. He's seeing how well it's going to go. It's one thing to take that quote just on itself, but KP, now we're at the point where we've heard him say, I'm not sure if it'll ever be 100% again. It hurts when I walk downhill. And if it actually gets any worse and this cortisone doesn't work, it's surgery and I'm out for 9 months. When you look at it, and he's a very honest guy, but he doesn't always give you everything. Like, those are three quotes from him. Like, I'm scared.
Yeah. And producer Jacob just confirmed that he has a torn labrum in his hip, which I believe is the same injury that Gary Woodland talked about at the US Open at Wingfoot that he has. So you kind of wonder, so there's a couple of things going on here. One is the Koepka thing of like, when you have that many different things and the way that he's talking about it, I don't know. It feels like the surgery thing is inevitable. I'm with Mark. I hope not. Like, that would suck, because Brooks playing at the highest level is phenomenal for the sport, because he brings this just attitude that nobody else really brings. He's just a very specific, unique attitude that nobody else really has. And that clashes with a lot of other people. And that's fun and that's great. The other thing that's going on here, I think you're seeing some of the, and there's always been injuries in golf, but maybe you're seeing some of the effects of swinging it 140 miles an hour or whatever these guys' clubhead speed is. And you do start to wonder, like, not to take it back to Bryson, but what is sustainable in the long term for how hard these guys are swinging? Now, guys have always swung hard. Maybe I'm overstating that a little bit, but with the Koepka stuff, with the Woodland stuff at the US Open, I don't know. That's something that I kind of think about along the way with not just where this is going, but how long some of these guys' careers will actually be.
Well, that's a heck of a point. And just quickly to that, you know, back in the day, a Nicklaus used to sling the club a little bit more. There'd be more swing of the club, like a Shane Lowry, for argument's sake. Or Rory has that too, where a bunch of the bowed wrist guys, the closed club face guys, like a DJ and a Brooks, and even Morikawa to a certain extent, they have to use the torque of their body. So they move the club more than what they swing it freely. And the free swingers, the Sam Sneeds, the Phil Mickelsons, they're more injury averse to me. It's if you're rotating real hard and you're putting a bunch of torque on your forward side, that's what starts to put pressure on one, is the first thing. And then you reference Rick that when he complains about walking downhill. Well, look, Shadow Creek and this week, that's important to me. But a few weeks' time in Augusta National, there are some wicked hills you've got to walk down in that place there. I think of 10. I think of 11 down the hill. I think of 2 down the hill. I mean, 6 walking down the hill on that par 3, that is just bananas how steep it is. So if this is a guy who's battling with a left knee on downhill walks, 4 or 5 rounds around that place, that'll do you in, man.
I assume this is not the last we are going to hear from Brooks Koepka, or the last we are going to talk about that knee, unfortunately. So we'll keep a close eye on it this week. Kyle, you and I are going to move forward with matchups, expert picks, one and done, and best bets. Mark, we're going to say thank you to you. We're going to let you go. Thanks for joining us.
See you guys. I'm going to text my matchups because I want to continue this little run. So you guys do your best, okay?
All right, we'll try to keep up. We'll be back after these words.
I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now. Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain. Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
And we're back. All right, KP, you and I moving forward on the rest of this episode. We're going to jump right into matchups. We got to figure out a way to catch Mark. We can't not let him win another week. So we're going to jump right into this. Justin Thomas, minus 125 versus Rory McIlroy, plus 105. It's a couple of big boys.
Yeah, I'll go with Rory just because of the value. Rory's kind of had a sneaky, decent run. He's top 12 in each of his last three. What would that be? BMW Tour Championship, US Open, I think. Mm-hmm. Did you see the video the PGA Tour posted on of his driving range session on Monday or Tuesday?
No, I didn't. What was it?
I shouldn't get worked up about, you know, driving range heroes. But the swing looked unbelievable. I mean, it just looked, maybe I'm just tired of Bryson trying to, you know, hit Albert Bell like home runs, and I just need some Rory smoothness. But
okay, so if Bryson is Albert Bell, does that make Rory like Griffey Jr.?
For sure. Rory is
like a sweet
junior. Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
Ooh, we should you and I need to get deep on this.
We need to do the cross sport comp swings.
Who would be I think the interesting one would be like a
I have one for you.
Like a Manny Ramirez.
That's good. How about this one? First one that came to mind, Daniel Berger, Hunter Pence. How about
that? Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. Just like that really awkward down kind of low type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's solid. I wonder if I'm trying to think of somebody like DJ who's just really long, and I'm trying to think of who had a really long. Producer Jacob's going to kill us.
No, well, this will be some off-season content. I'm going to take Justin Thomas here. I'm going to take the favorite. He's just phenomenal from tee to green. We know what he does in these no-cut events. 9 of his 13 career PGA Tour titles in such events, and I have a really good stat for him that I'm actually going to save for later. But I'll take JT in this matchup. Next up, Patrick Cantlay, plus 110, had a bit of a disappointing Sunday at the Shriners last week against Xander Schauffele, minus 137. Kyle, what say you?
I say that Jordan Spieth is Ichiro, just slaps it around all over the place. I'm going to go with I'm going to go with Xander here, foreshadowing for my future picks. He's just been, if you look at some of the data golf stuff on his numbers over the last 3 months, 6 months, he's been arguably the best player in the world. And I thought Cantlay was great the first three rounds, obviously, last week. He was disappointing on Sunday, man. I not that he didn't win, but just to go out and shoot 73 in those conditions with that field, it was just, that was a disappointment. So I'm going to go with Xander here.
Cantlay was bogey-free like 28 consecutive holes or something from, I guess it would have been Friday into Saturday. Then he bogeys four of his first six on Sunday to play himself.
It was weird.
It was weird.
Yeah, it was weird.
I also took Xander. I believe he's got 9 consecutive top 25s. Obviously, in a field of 78, you're looking for a little bit better this week. But if Justin Thomas is the king of no-cut events, Xander Schauffele is the prince of no-cut events. 3 of his 4 PGA Tour titles in such events. And he's got that shadow leaderboard victory at the Tour Championship. So I also took Xander as well.
He's got a shadow leaderboard victory. Now he needs a Shadow Creek leaderboard victory.
Oh!
Professional stuff over here.
Okay, this is really interesting. We've gotten to the point where two of the studs from this, you know, big three, Colin Morikawa, Matthew Wolf in a matchup. And I think this is the first time we've seen Matthew Wolf be the favorite. He's minus 125 against Colin Morikawa's plus 105, Kyle.
Yeah, I'm going with Wolf. More to come on him here in a little bit with me, but he's number 12 in the world. How about that? We talked about that on Sunday. I said he would move up to, I think, 16 or something like that. He's number 12 in the world. And the numbers back it up. I mean, it's a tiny sample size, but in eight rounds this year, I think he's second behind Bryson in terms of strokes gained overall. Obviously, you're just looking at U.S. Open and Shriners. I think he's the kind of guy that you might get more consistency overall out of Morikawa over the course of a season, but you're going to get these three, four, five tournament stretches where Wolf is just out of his mind. And I think he's kind of in the middle of one of those right now.
Producer Jacob and I were talking before we went live about Matthew Wolf, and I'm really torn on him, like from a betting perspective, because I think you are paying a real premium for him right now, right? He's coming off back-to-back second place finishes. Yeah. He's phenomenal. He's now a favorite over Colin Morikawa. I think you're paying a premium, but I've also been, he is the hardest guy to model because his game is getting significantly better every time he plays. Like he's beating the model faster than anybody, than I can even put it together. So I'm trying to weigh that. I took Colin Morikawa here because I didn't want to pay the premium. I think that he played well enough last week. He missed the cut. He was like 5 or 6 under and missed the cut. But what Matthew Wolf is doing and the trajectory that he's on long term is like, I'm stunned. It's phenomenal stuff. I can't wait to see.
Yeah, it is. And I'm curious, I'm going to look up his, because Datagolf has this really cool like projections thing of like what's your career, like how it's going to go. And, you know, for part of it, it doesn't play out until like you turn another age. So until he's 22, it won't have his entire 21-year-old season or 21-year-old year. So I'm interested to see when he does turn 22, what's the trajectory for him? Because that's such a young age. Again, we keep going back. We talk about him, talk about Neiman, and talk about Sungjae. They're younger than like you're envisioning a young player being.
Right.
And I'm really curious to see what the comps are for him whenever he turns, once he gets through that entire 21-year-old year.
Tyrrell Hatton, coming off his victory on the European Tour, flying over to face Hunter Pence, Daniel Berger. Berger is plus 100, Tyrrell Hatton minus 120. This one's tough. You kind of have to weigh in. Does it matter that he's flying back from overseas? Does it matter that he won last week for Hatton? I mean, he's won 3 times in his last 13 starts. That's pretty
tough.
Where are you headed in this one, KP?
I think I'm... This feels a little suckery, like to go with Hatton, but I can't help myself. I don't think I love his game. His percentage of winning is just, it's astonishing. I mean, 3 times is a lot in and of itself, but he's only started like 12 or 13 events, right? Yep. And so that winning percentage is it's really good. So I'm gonna go with Hatton over Berger, although I'll probably regret that come the weekend.
I tried to be the smartest guy in the room and I went with the same. I was like, okay, I really like Hatton here, but am I a sucker if I do that? So then I just switched and took Berger. I just didn't want to be
strategy.
The sucker. Yeah. I might not be, I don't know, but I mean, Berger's floor is pretty high. Just trying to beat one other golfer. Seems pretty good to me. Tommy Fleetwood. Minus 114 versus Sungjae Im minus 116. I'll go first here. I've been obviously very high on Sungjae. He was 3rd in the field in strokes gained tee to green last week at the Shriners. It was his best tee to green week since the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And before that, the Honda Classic. He finished first at Honda. He finished 3rd at the API. I might declare Sungjae back for the 2nd or 3rd time, but I'll take him here in a matchup over Tommy Fleetwood.
I'll go with Fleetwood. He had a nice little 2-week run after missing the U.S. Open cut. He finished 2nd at the Scottish Open, lost in a playoff there. Mm. And then I think that was a playoff, wasn't it?
It was. No, you're right.
Yeah. And then he finished in the top 20 at the BMW PGA, which is one of the better European Tour events. So I don't know. I could be talked into either. I'll go with Fleetwood just to go against you, though.
Smart idea. I was 0 for 6 2 weeks ago. Harris English plus 100 over or not over versus Victor Hovland minus 120. What, like, it's been Morikawa, it's been Wolf, I feel like we've spent a lot of oxygen on them. There's still Victor Hovland hanging around here.
Yeah, Victor Hovland, you know, I think he suffers from just not having one, which another fellow Oklahoma State player suffers from sometimes. His numbers are great, though. Like, if you look at the strokes gained stuff, especially from tee to green, it's not – I think it's a little buoyed by the fact that he came out of the gates really hot in June and July. That stretch he had where it was like the two events at Muirfield Village and there was one or two others in there was just – it was incredible. So I think there's a little bit of that going on. But I'm going to go with Harris English. He has really quietly been – like a top 15 type guy in the world. And I don't know, maybe there's value there because I think we're just not, Hovland's obviously sexier because he's younger. He's got, you know, the trajectory, all this stuff, but I don't know. I think English is probably the better overall player right now. And when you can get that kind of value at plus 100 versus minus 120, I think you take it.
I also took English, and I agree with you. The all-around game is phenomenal. He missed the cut last week, which closed out. It was one of the longest active cut streaks on the PGA Tour. I think he was at 8 or 9 before last week, and he shot a 68-69. Like, imagine being 5 under in 2 rounds on the PGA Tour and not making the cut. Like, I'm okay to just buy back in on Harrison.
But don't you kind of like it when somebody's missed a cut the week before?
Yeah. I do.
I mean, I think Mark would be hollering at us right now, but I think for betting purposes, I think that it can work to your advantage because some of that stuff, I mean, like you're a shot away from finishing T12 or whatever, right? Like if you go out and shoot 65, 64 on the weekend, which he could have done. So I don't know. I don't get super worked up about the missed cut thing, especially in a good field.
Yeah. I mean, Matthew Wolf was 8 under through 2 rounds. So the cut was 7 under, he was 8 under and he finished, he got into a playoff. Like anything can happen if you make the cut. And we've seen that time and time again on the PGA Tour. I don't know if Harris English has the ability to go out and shoot a 61 and fly up the leaderboard on Saturday, but like, yeah, I don't think this is a big deal at all.
So last 6 months, Data Golf, Harris English strokes gained 1.8 per round, which is like 8th. And Victor Hovland is 1.5, which is like 13th or something.
Both of them. So are they're. Phenomenal. I mean,
both of those guys are right there with, you know, the Scheffler, the Wolf, the Finau, the Rahm. Everybody's kind of behind. Well, we'll talk about this guy in a second. Xander Berger, JT Bryson, but yeah, they've both been really, really good over the last 6 months.
They certainly have. Let's move on to our picks. So we'll have to get Greg's pick and Mark's pick, which I assume producer Jacob will put together. We'll tweet it out on social media, all that good stuff. So make sure to follow us everywhere at First Cut Pod for all of the picks. Let's go with sleepers for this week. And I got to tell you, a lot of these odds have, well, I'll get the updated odds because removing Dustin Johnson from this player pool, I'm sure shifted everybody. Yeah, John Rahm is now the favorite at 9-1. JT's down to 10-1. So there has been a bit of movement. Kyle, let's start with our sleepers. Who is your sleeper for this week, CJ Cup?
I went with Scottie Scheffler. This number moved as well. The last time I saw it, it was 40-1, which is kind of the number that we use as a little bit of a cutoff for sleepers, quote unquote. I just think there's a ton of value there because he went T37 at Sanderson, miscut at Shriners last week. And you could argue like, okay, since he's returned from the COVID positive test, he just hasn't been as good as he was before. I'm willing to take a flyer at 40-1 that he's just had two kind of off weeks and then he'll bounce back. I think that if he was 30-1 or 25, I would think differently. But at 40 or 35, I kind of like him as a sleeper.
It's very easy to look at his first start back and say, okay, he told us he was rusty. He looked rusty. He was missing everything left off the tee. We can give him a pass for that one. And then we look at last week, 69-67, 6 under, missed the cut. Again, I don't care. If you shoot 6 under the first 2 rounds and you get clipped by a historically low cut line, I'm cool with it. Scottie Scheffler still has a huge ceiling. I love it. My sleeper Mackenzie Hughes, 70-1. I'm not sure he can actually win this. I mean, historically speaking, you get a stud or at least like an up and coming guy who wins these types of events. But what Mackenzie Hughes has done is hard to ignore. You know, he's been phenomenal in terms of strokes gained when you compare it to the rest of this field. And we don't have the shot link data from Corrales, where he finished third, so he'd get a boost there. And he seems to show up in a lot of these either really deep field, tough courses. Like he just finds a way. So at 70-1, I think he's a guy that can make a bit of noise, kind of like he did at the Tour Championship, where he moved from like 26th to 7th or whatever he did with the starting strokes.
I kind of love Mackenzie Hughes. Like I think he's great. And I'm curious about what you think his ceiling is for like a career, because he's done this thing where he's like consistently gotten better and better every single year. And you start to, at some point, like you're not a top 5 guy in the world, right? You're not a top 10 guy probably in the world. So you move into the top 50 and it's like, there's a ceiling at some point, but mm-hmm. Where is it? How high can you go? Like, what do you think about him career wise?
Yeah, I think he's kind of close to his ceiling, quite honestly. I think maybe, like, if you want to talk about world ranking, getting into the 30s might be something he can do if he captures a win at some point. I would not be surprised to see Mackenzie Hughes win once every 18 months at an event that's like the RSM or Mayakoba or Houston, like something like that. Once every 18 months, he hovers around in the, you know, 50 to 70 range. Maybe he gets up to the 30 in the world or 35 in the world golf rankings. I think he's, as much as I love him, the way he does it with the short game, I think he's getting close to a ceiling.
Data Golf has his comps as Pat Perez. Okay. Kevin Stadler from 2008, Scott Stallings, my guy, Johnson Wagner and Kevin Tway. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, you might be right. Like we might be at the ceiling. I wish he would be, I hope he's the kind of guy that at least contends for a major or two. Cause that would be really cool to see him kind of get in the mix at a PGA, an Open, something like that. Just cause you're when your kids use, you're not Rory. You're not going to go out and have like 7 hacks at winning a big trophy like that. So I don't know. I like McKenzie Hughes. That's all I got.
We could see him at a President's Cup, right? That could be cool.
You still there?
Yeah. You still there?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Let's just move on. That was a perfect time for that to drop out because we were right in between it. here we go. Top 10 picks. Kyle, we'll start with you. You've got a very interesting name for your top 10.
Yep. I got Matthew Wolf. He's 2-1. Again, I think he's on a heater right now. It feels like he's on that, you know, that run that guys get on where they'll finish like top 10 2 or 3 times in a row. And then eventually they'll get a win at the end of it. And then they'll fall off for like a month. It feels like we're in the middle of that right now for him.
He's just been so good. I also like the fact that we're going to Shadow Creek where no one's played or at least has played in tournament conditions. You know, for Wolf every week, guys that are young, you know, it's their first or second time playing a course. Now everybody's kind of in that same situation. I think it's a pretty good spot for him. I went deeper. I went Russell Henley, who since the restart leads this field in strokes gained approach. He's the only guy averaging over a stroke per round since the restart, which is kind of surprising and also impressive. And I think that, listen, I know very little about Shadow Creek. I've kind of tried to do as much research and reconnaissance as possible. It looks like you, depending on how they set this up, you might have to be really exact with your approach shots. I don't think it's going to play as long as 7,500 on the scorecard says. I think it's going to play shorter than that. And they can put some of these pins in spots where if you're not exact, I think you could be in trouble. So I like Henley as an approach player.
Do you feel like Henley is a sucker top 10 guy every week, every time he plays?
What do you mean? Like I'm a sucker. Well, it's
just, I just like you start looking at like sleeper guys and I always land on Russell Henley.
Yeah. That's because you like the ball strikers as you should.
Yeah. But I just like, does he finish in the top 10 as much as I think that he's going to finish in the top 10? I don't think he does.
Don't look this up. Okay. Do you know how many times he's finished in the top 10 in his last 8 starts?
I think like 3.
3. That's pretty good. 2 of his last 4 and 3 of his last 8.
Yeah, that is good. It is good.
It's obviously a deeper field, but there's only 78 players in it. So,
well, and half of them are from like the Sunshine Tour Order of Merit or whatever. Yeah,
when we were on break, producer Jacob actually went through the exemptions, and it is wild stuff who gets in and out of this thing. And there's like 18 guys from the Korean Tour of Merit or whatever that get into this event. So, yeah, I mean, he just has to have like a decent week to finish in the top 10, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. This is the argument for like why JT's going to win. Well, we'll get to him in a second. Why he's going to win like 6 Masters, because these tiny fields and these guys just can you don't have to deal with your your Cinderella stories that are shooting 20 under for the week.
Yeah. Let's do it. Justin Thomas, my pick to win. I got him at 12. Now the line has moved because of the Dustin Johnson news. He is 10-1 as we record this. I don't think I need to explain this too much. I mean, you think he's going to win 25 times or whatever in the next however many years. I just think he's absolutely phenomenal. I think that, this was the stat that I had for him. Prior to the odds change, 12-1 was the, I could only find one other time in the last 3 years where he was longer at a no cut event. So if you process that, you know, the 5 or 6 no cut events that he plays every year, he was always 7-1, 8-1, 10-1. He was 12-1 previously, now back down to 10-1. And I said, the value's too much. He's flying under the radar a little bit with how good DJ's been, how good John Rahm has been. I'm taking JT. He's my pick to win.
What do you think it is about the no cut thing? I know we kind of joke about it, but it seems to be like a, is it like you get into a situation where it's all the best guys and certain guys are just like, yeah, I'm the best of all the best guys. Is it as simple as that?
I think it's kind of so I don't have the numbers to back this up, but what I think it is especially guys with really high one round ceilings.
Yeah.
Xander, JT. I mean, even like, I don't know, like a Hideki. Hideki's won a couple of WGCs, right? Like if you can shoot a 61 or a 62 in one round, and you get 4 guaranteed cracks at it instead of 2 guaranteed cracks at it, I think it's a big deal. And these guys that can just make a bunch of birdies seem to figure out a way. But I assume KP, a lot of it is mental, where he's like, you know, you're not that these guys are playing for the cup, but you're not even thinking about it. It's just like, I know I've got 4 days out here. I'm just going to go out and attack this thing.
That's kind of the Wolf argument too, right?
Yeah. Right. I think there's a great argument to be made for Wolf. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going with the other guy that loves no cut events, which is Xander Schauffele. You know, you look at, again, I go back to his numbers on Data Golf, the True Strokes game. The last 3 months, he's number 1 in the world. He's at 2.46. DJ's at 2.44. I mean, you think about how good DJ's been over the last 3 months, and Xander's numbers, they played the same number of events, 8 events for each of them, and Xander's been better. And some of that's the True Championship where DJ won, but Xander actually won. And, I don't know. I might even go with him for my one and done this week. That's how good I feel about where he's at.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're on the same page. He is actually one of the names that I'm considering and looking at this from a one and done perspective. So this is low key a big purse. It's like 9.75 million. It'll be the biggest until Augusta. It'll be pretty big for a while. So I'm okay with kind of burning a bigger name here. And I mean, you could make the argument. You could play Xander in so many spots. It's not like I'm saving him for, you know, I can save Rory. I can obviously now save DJ or JT or whatever, Bryson. But like, I'm comfortable burning Xander in a really good spot with a massive purse. I think strategically that's a good one.
The saving Rory thing, it's like, what are you saving him for? You know, like although we don't know if we're going to do Jeopardy style again, according to producer Jacob, like when you say I'm saving Rory, what do you envision saving him for?
So when I say I'm saving Rory, I'm saying that cause I'm assuming people are saving him for Augusta. That is what people save Rory for.
But is that even a good play?
I like to be one step off. So like if everyone wants to use Rory at Augusta, I want to use Rory at like a WGC event, right? Right.
Yeah. Just
something like this, something where
Mexico.
Yeah, right. Something where it's going to be a short field. Mexico would be great because the ball's going to fly a million miles. He already hit, like, it lends right into his game. Like, that's what I would be saving Rory for. But I know the public saves Rory for one of two spots, Augusta or wherever the Open Championship is.
Do you think they'll have to move the Mexico event with Bryson next year?
Why? Because he's just going to, like,
he'll be hitting it, like, off the property. It'll be insane.
The strokes gained off, because the numbers are so skewed there. The strokes gained off the tee numbers at Chapultepec are always absolutely bonkers. Yeah, I can't wait to see what he does there.
He will not have a strokes gained approach number. He will only have off the tee and around the green.
Did we ever figure out if they fixed that week at like Rocket Mortgage where he like broke the system?
God, that was so crazy. I was like, what's going on here? And then I finally realized what it was. And it was, I mean, we had already been joking about how he broke golf. And I don't know. It's been interesting to hear. There's been a lot of conversation around, you know, and we talked about it briefly, but the Fitzpatrick, Bryson stuff, even, you know, to today, to Tuesday, whatever it is of the week after. And I just think that, you know, I did 5 storylines for Augusta. 1 month out, we're 1 month, well, we're like 30 days from the first round of the Masters. And to me, that's the number one story. And, you know, I think another big story is the way that guys prepare for the Masters. That's something that people wanted to know a lot about. Like Koepka this week and DJ now, you know, with some of his stuff going on. But I mean, do you agree that Bryson is the number one storyline going to the Masters?
I wish he wasn't. Actually, I don't care. I'm fine with him being the storyline. But like, yes, I think it is very obvious that he is the story. I think when you get, and here's the litmus test. When all of your peers are talking about you, you're the story. It's not us. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It is us, but it's also them too. So I think it's very clear that he's the story.
I think that's a great point, because who cares what we, I mean, well, hopefully people care what we say, but in terms of like what matters, what the players say matters, like what Tiger says matters. If Tiger wants to talk about the RSM, the week of the Masters, well, all of a sudden the RSM matters. I don't know why he would do that. I don't know why I'm even saying that, but I think that's a great call. And I don't know. It seems like it's just turned into everybody hating on Bryson, and I hope that's not what it should be. It should be praising Bryson for what he's done, and at the same time saying, okay, is there something that other people, not Bryson, should do about this?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about this later, but the only reason people hate on Bryson is because of his demeanor. If his demeanor was that of Brooks Koepka, and if Brooks Koepka was like, yo, I'm going to get jacked and I'm going to hit bombs, and then the rest of that was just, he just went on being Brooks, everyone would love it. It's easy to hate Bryson because rubs people the wrong way.
Totally. Yeah. I totally agree. And that's why it's become such an important, like, talking point, is because it's almost like it had to happen like that to affect change. Do you think that we're going to see this week at Shadow Creek, to get it back on track a little bit, like some of the, like the speed stuff from Rory and these guys who are, I guess DJ was one of the ones that was showing off his TrackMan stuff. He won't be in it, but I mean, are we going to get guys that are just trying to murder the ball, like even more so than before?
It's interesting because we kind of saw this with Tony Finau too. It's one thing to do it on the range. It's another to put it in competition, which guys seem a lot more hesitant to do. So I don't know if it's a couple of weeks for Rory on the range and he's ready to put it into play. I don't know. I actually think it's a mental hurdle for a lot of these guys than it is. I don't think it's a physical hurdle. We saw Tony Finau do it. We saw Rory get there. I think it's actually just a mental hurdle.
Yeah. And who wants to experiment with $9 million on the line?
Yeah, not I. all right, so you're one and done pick. I kind of have somewhat committed to Xander. You were mentioning you're leaning in that direction. Is that where you're going?
Yeah, probably Xander. I think so. I mean, I might talk myself into. It'd be so easy to talk myself into JT or somebody like that, but I'll probably end up going with Xander. I might. I might go with Wolf. I mean, if you know, it's an interesting spot for him because I think if you think about saving him, you want to get him in the middle of a heater and not like try to catch the front or tail end of it. So I don't know. If other people go Xander also, I might go with Matthew Wolf.
I like using Wolf in a one and done format instead of a DFS or a betting format more, because I think you're paying a premium for him in places where they assign an actual value to him. But if you're just using him in a one and done and it doesn't cost you any more or any less than someone else, like I actually think that's a pretty good place to deploy him.
Yeah.
I have Greg's expert picks. We're going to circle back on those and we're going to go to our best bets first. No surprise from me, Xander Schauffele. You know, we can say he doesn't win enough. I'm taking him to finish in the top five. It's 3-1, which, you know, this will certainly backfire. Feels like free money, but like that'll backfire. But I just love this guy. I don't know how he doesn't compete like every single event that he plays.
Well, he kind of does. I mean, he has recently. I'm going to go Justin Rose to finish in the top 10. It's plus 550. It seems dumb because we haven't seen Rose pop up very much recently. But he's the kind of guy that he has the talent to where, like, he finished T9 at the PGA Championship. I had no idea he finished T9 at the PGA Championship because we didn't see him. But that's the talent level of, like, hey, if he's feeling good in a week, he'll top 10, and you don't even know that it happened. So. Right. At plus 550, I think that's a pretty decent guy to kind of be on to finish in the top 10, even though the recent events have not been very good.
I'm hoping he can find his form because I've been sitting on like a 50-1 Justin Rose Masters ticket for like 9 months or something like that. So hopefully he can find some form.
I bet it's longer than that right now. I don't know. I'll look up the Masters. How many casual golf fans know that Matthew Wolf is 12th in the world and Justin Rose is 24?
Zero casual golf fans.
That's crazy, dude. I mean, that is really crazy.
Rose is 40 right now, so I have him at 50. So I'm still in good shape, but would like it that to get a little bit shorter. Here's Greg's expert picks. So hot off the presses, Greg took for his sleeper Russell Henley. Okay, interesting.
There you go.
Hideki Matsuyama is his top 10 lock. That's plus 225. And his pick to win, Rory McIlroy.
I've heard of him.
He's pretty good at golf, I've heard.
Yeah, the swing, I mean, the swing looks great. The hype would be, that was one of my other storylines for Augusta, Rory and the slam. Obviously, that's always a huge storyline. Go ahead.
If Rory wins before Augusta, so I guess either this week or next week.
Yeah.
My heart.
I know.
It'll be so perfect.
I know. I mean, it just, I don't know. I think that His finishes of late have been better than you would imagine they would have been if you've been following it closely. I think three straight top 12s. He hasn't seemed like he's been that great, but he's been a lot better than he was coming out of the quarantine. So I don't know. I mean, I think the iron play is getting better. That's what it'll come down to. I mean, how good are you from 160 and in? And I don't know. We'll see. I, for him to win the Masters this year would be an insane ending to what's been just a weird, bizarre year.
Let me just get a Bryson Rory final group. Like, come on.
Can you imagine the people like the golf Twitter world? Would anybody be rooting for Bryson? Just the people that love chaos, love for things to burn.
Yeah, exactly right. The people who want to watch the world burn will be on Bryson. That's
it would be that's I always do like a dream final pairings. That's the one this year, I think.
Has to be. The storylines are just pure. Absolutely pure.
Yeah.
All right, KP. Much appreciated. CJ Cup Pod. We'll be back all week. Doug Bell will join us at some point, maybe Thursday, maybe Friday. I don't know, but he's at Shadow Creek. He'll be in Vegas. He'll join us later. Kyle Porter, you can find on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me on Twitter at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.